We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, good morning. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyer, is all things legal. Give us a call at 260-1870. We'll answer your legal questions. Good morning, Albert.
Hey, Doug, what's going on?
Nothing much. It looks like we'll have a day where we don't have to bundle up and get out there and enjoy ourselves today. You weathered the cold?
Yeah.
You weathered the cold? Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, the poor people in Texas, you know, with their frozen wind turbine, those work really great.
Yeah.
The state that produces the most natural gas and fossil fuels is one third or one fourth of the state is out of power during a horrible freeze. It's silliness. You know, look, I'm all for alternative energy, but let's wait till it's ready to roll and we have backup plans with fossil fuels until we can make that switch. But
let the market dictate what happens. Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say, and I was wondering, because I go to a lot of my information from, you know, like on highly scientific, intellectual information from Hollywood actors, because, you know, they just seem to be well-read on societal problems. And like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, and when Leonardo, when he's flying on his private plane, you know, I know he has a big concern about global warming, which doesn't seem to be happening this week, but yeah. I figured it out. You see, he made his money when he hit an iceberg in Titanic, right? So he's
right.
Got to keep the ice. He's got to keep the ice caps, you know, there. So I get it. But global warming. You know, it's interesting. You know how we can solve global warming?
They don't call it that anymore. They call it climate change.
Oh, it's not global. It's not global warming.
Yeah. When it freezes, then it's not global warming. It's climate change.
It's climate change? Okay, well, let me tell you this. You know how you stop global warming? You raise taxes and kill the oil industry in Louisiana. You know how you stop climate change? You raise taxes and kill the oil industry in Louisiana.
Yeah.
You know how you stop global cooling? You raise taxes and kill the oil industry in Louisiana. So, geez. All right. I guess that's our political statement today, huh? Social commentary. Social commentary.
We've got to be careful with our political statements. We might get canceled. So.
We get canceled. That's all right.
Culture, you know, culture cancer.
Can cancel culture? Cancel culture. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a fair question. It's a fair question as to, you know, because we have this in Louisiana. Texas should never be in this situation since they're, you know, top supplier of, you know, fossil fuels. But, you know, it's sort of a test run to see alternative.
Like driving around and you know, certain parts of the city, you know, that are somewhat hip, and they have these rain barrels catching rainwater off of the roof to conserve water. You don't need to do that in New Orleans. There's all the water in the world.
We got plenty of water.
Right here. You don't need to conserve. It's not like California, but people think, oh, my, we have to go to California. You know, we have to live like Californians live, you know, where they suffer droughts and they don't have all these rivers running through everything and the Mississippi River feeding them, and or you dig 4 feet down and you get water in this city.
Right.
But it's just this whole concept, people are buying into it without thinking, you know.
Well, let me tell you, I mean, you want to get some bad stares, like when you're trying to eat. You go to Tulane Student Union and start drinking Coke out of a plastic straw. I think there's some kind of ordinance on Tulane University prohibiting that. But as I always say, if you ever fly from coast to coast, you never look down and see a valley full of straws, plastic straws accumulating. So I think we're okay with that.
You see a valley full of wind turbine parts that are filling up landfills because they're only good for a certain period of time, and then they can't destroy them. They're made out of this hard resin product, and, you know, the half-life on these things is forever. So,
hey, you know, and we're Louisiana first. And Louisiana's oil industry is the biggest, is besides tourism, Louisiana. Yeah, and the oil industry, that supports us, and that's one of the things that made Louisiana. Well, I can't say that. Can I say made Louisiana great? Is somebody going to get offended?
Sure.
So what made Louisiana very prosperous in the past is, you know, the oil industry. And look, there's a difference between climate change and pollution. Those are two different issues, two separate and completely segregated issues.
Listen, I'm a conservationist. I believe in all of that. I mean, I fish. I want our waters clean. You know, and look, if you're a big corporation, small corporation, and you're polluting, come down hard on them, smack them, and make sure they clean up and you know, don't pollute our environment or our waters. Let's just be reasonable about everything, okay?
Yeah. Leonard DiCaprio can stop listening to this part of shit now.
We got to get it in quick.
With that, we watch LSU basketball yesterday?
We were at a, believe it or not, a crawfish boil yesterday.
It's early.
And game was on, so I caught bits and pieces of it. But LSU looked pretty good again. They scored a bunch of points.
They got talent. They have talent. I mean, they have four NBA guys on the team. And they have great talent. It's just an issue of playing together. And the converse is this, is they can go in there. It looks, they 2 weeks ago when we were talking, they're on the bubble. They're off the bubble, and they have to play themselves, lose themselves back onto the bubble. So they play Georgia this weekend, but they're second in the SEC, tied for second. They should make it, provided they play Georgia. They should beat Georgia and almost break even and do a decent appearance in the SEC. They should make it. But LSU could be one and done because they're just not – they're five, six great players who don't play together. Or they're a team that could come together and make a run.
I think they have more issues defensively than they do offensively. Because they're scoring points, but they're just not – you know, I think they need a big man inside. They need a seven-footer that can protect the rim. You know, they got a lot of 6'8", 6'9", guys that can play bigger than they are because they jump well. But, you know, kind of like the Pelicans did this year, which I'm very happy about, going to get Adams, Hernan Gomez, all these guys, you know, go ahead and get a guy that can protect your rim, grab rebounds. Adams, I think, is like the second or third rebounder in the NBA right now. And he's just big, strong. And let me tell you, if you go in there trying to shoot the ball, a guy like that's going to make you change your shot a little bit. And that's the one thing I think they don't have. They do get out-rebounded. They do get, and like you said, you know, they a lot of one-on-one, a lot of things on offense. But they're scoring points on offense, so you can't really fault them for that so much. But defensively, they're getting a lot of points scored on. Same thing with the Pelicans.
Yeah, well, you know, the Pelicans are bipolar. I mean, they were up by, 11 in the fourth quarter against the Suns, and they were outscored 41-12 in the fourth quarter. And Chris Paul. Paul ate them up.
12 points in the fourth quarter. And look, and then it's close at the end, and Zion's killing it. He's got his personal record for points. And there's 15 seconds left to go win the game, and they don't get him the ball. He doesn't even touch the ball.
Yeah. And that was the game before that. Yeah.
Yeah, the game before that, yeah. Damian Lillard was unconscious, but yeah.
Yeah, well, they have a hard time defending on the 3-point. You know, I think they just have defending the 3-pointer, and they just hadn't found their closeout because they probably lost 10-12 games in the last couple of minutes, just not being able to close it out. And a lot of these games they had,
which was the previous coach's problem. You know, they bring it to the promised land and they lose in the end. And, you know, and again, I think it goes back to what we were talking about last week. I think they need that alpha dog, that guy that's going to say, hey, look, I'm the guy that needs to get the ball. Get me the ball. And I'm going to drive and dish. I'm not going to shoot it every time. I'm going to make something happen. And unfortunately, I don't think Brandon Ingram is that guy. Maybe Zion can turn into that guy and get to the line if they hack him. But
He's only 20 years old. Well, you know, the Pelicans are like a quarterback that's great between the 20s. You know, who throws the ball between the 20s but can't score. And that seems they can't close it out. And also, there's indications that Drew may be coming back, which would be interesting to develop. I don't know. I mean, I still think it's still up in the air, it seems like. But that's a possibility.
But let's not judge him based on the second half of this year's performance. I mean, the guy had a bunch of cracked ribs, a shoulder issue. He had a lot of problems that prevented him from throwing the ball. And, you know, honestly, shame on him for coming back. I know he's a competitor, but he wasn't ready. He couldn't throw the ball down the field, which, you know, they just put everybody in the box and dared him to do it. And that's how you get beat. You know, when you got a guy that can go in there, maybe, you know, Jameis that can go in and run, and even though he's not the quarterback that Drew is, you know, he can throw the long pass, the short pass, or whatever. So let's see. I mean, you know, honestly, I read an article in a magazine a year or so ago, the Men's Journal magazine. It was an article about Tom Brady's physical therapist. And he's so good that he actually set up a facility right next door to the Patriots facility. And a lot of the players go to him. And he's the real deal. I mean, this guy supposedly, and whatever he has done for Tom Brady, who's, you know, still got the arm to make the tough long pass and the, you know, the deep middle pass, that kind of stuff. Whatever he's doing seems to be working, and Drew might want to hook up with him, you know.
There you go. And we'll round it off before we go to break. LSU baseball, all's right with the world. LSU baseball is back after 348 days. And LSU actually this year has a little Catholic league in New Orleans influence. They have starting first baseman Trey Morgan. He is from Brother Martin. Will Helmers is from Jesuit. They're two freshmen. We got Cade Beloso, who's from the parish. Yeah, brah. And so he's going to, you know, so we're all's right in the world. And if they go to Omaha this year, I'm making the pilgrimage. I'm just saying in advance. So
there you go.
I'm going this year. No, but also, Jaden Hill pitched yesterday. All you LSU baseball fans, Jaden Hill probably has the best stuff of any pitcher since Ben McDonald. And so he'll be excited. Whether he performs that way is a different issue, but he's got some of the best stuff that you will ever see. So let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We were talking earlier a little bit about the cold and global warming. I'm sorry, climate change. It's no more global warming. Yeah. Climate change. I always tell my kids, I said, you know, climate change four times a year, spring, summer, winter, and fall. It's been happening since the time of Adam and Eve, from what I hear. But probably a lot of homeowners and business owners probably may have experienced some damages, frozen pipes, and, you know, those type of things. Albert, what are some of the coverages for your homeowner's policy, your business policy for the cold, and you know, whether you can make a claim or not? For example, like a frozen pipe that busts. Is that something that's covered under the homeowner's?
You had a pipe freeze in the attic, and it damaged your interior damaged your ceilings, et cetera, your furniture, you would have a cause of action against your insurance company or a claim against your insurance company for the damages sustained. You know, obviously what you want to do is call them immediately, try to get as much of the wet out of there, take as many photographs as you can. You want to do what you can to what's called mitigate your damages, right? Make your damages less. You have an affirmative duty to do that. But believe it or not, they will repair everything, but they will not repair the pipe. So you've got to get a plumber in there to go fix the broken pipe. They won't pay for that, but they will pay damages as a result of that.
Okay, so let's talk about the distinction. So you have a pipe burst, and let's say it burst in the attic, and it, you know, you have sheetrock on the ceiling, some of the walls, you have some water damage. What's the distinction as far as paying, you know, having the insurance company pay for the burst pipe versus the damage arising from the burst pipe?
Well, and that's exactly what it covers, right? It'll cover damages resulting from an occurrence, and the occurrence, of course, is the burst pipe. It's very similar to what contractors have for their general liability policy, right? So a contractor will have a general liability policy. You want to confirm, gee whiz, and a lot of homeowners are confused by this. They say, oh, I want my contractor to have general liability insurance. And you absolutely do. But be careful, because it doesn't cover as many things as you might think. For instance, if the contractor puts a wall up and the wall is not straight, it's not done right, the sheetrock's not correct, and all these things are wrong, you don't have a claim against their insurance company because it's considered their work, and their work is not covered. However, damages resulting from their work would be covered. So if the wall should fall and, you know, cause damage to an existing structure or whatever else, then there would necessarily be coverage, unless it was, you know, during the time they were doing the work, et cetera. So there's a lot of different coverages. Same thing with the homeowner's policy. For instance, when you have a burst pipe under the house, right, like a sewer pipe, the insurance company will pay to dig, to chip the concrete beam around the perimeter, to, you know, get to the pipe and remove the pipe, but they're not going to pay to replace the pipe and the hangers. So when that happens, you're going to probably have $1,000 or $2,000 plumbing bill for somebody to get in there to run all the new pipes, because they're not going to pay for that. They're only going to pay for the damages resulting from that. And they're only going to pay from what's under the slab. So any pipe that's separated or dips or sags between the house and the city's main connection, then they're not going to pay for that either. So if you've got to dig under your yard and under the your driveway, whatever, that's all separate. So they're going to only, because they cover what's under, from the roof to under the slab only. And again, in this situation, you want to be sure to have your adjuster's estimate checked out. Because let me tell you, we're renovating a little house right now with my daughter, and a year ago, 2x4s were $2, $2.25
a piece. Yeah.
They're more than $6 a piece. They're more than $6 a piece at Lowe's and Home Depot. So it's just the price of materials has gone through the roof, and right. I know the exact date software is supposed to catch up with that. But a lot of these insurance companies use their own Xactimate type software, and you want to make sure you get it evaluated by someone who can go in and get current pricing on everything, because the materials are out of the roof.
Now, let me ask you a theoretical question. If you go in and they give you money and there's damages in that, the covered damages or greater than what they paid, what would be the next step in order to get that extra supplement?
Well, again, what we have to explain to a lot of clients that, you know, come to see us is that, well, how much is this going to cost? Okay. You know, people come in, man, I got a great case that we got this contractor dead to right, or we got this insurance company dead to right. So the contractor comes in and says, yeah, we've got this, you know, claim against a subcontractor claim against contractor. But that's all great. If you have the liability side done, you've got to make sure you firm up your damages. That's the second half of the equation, right? What are my damages? So you need to get someone out there, number one, that knows what they're doing, knows what, can look at that estimate and say, wait a minute, this guy missed this and he missed that. He didn't include that, or she didn't include the underlayment for the flooring and, you know, those kinds of things. And all of a sudden, you know, you get this check and then you hire a contractor, and the contractor comes out and says, wait, they didn't, you know, it's going to be another $15,000. And so you want to make sure that you can go in and have someone who's experienced that can go in and articulate the differences and get paid up front. Another thing, and this is a big issue, in fact, I've got at least two cases in the office. In fact, we just went through one through arbitration in one. The insurance company was dragging their feet. And so one client, you know, who happened to have enough money, but not endless funds, was able to go in and just get the work done himself without having received a check from the insurance company. And so he paid a lot of people cash. He hired some mm-hmm. folks hanging out in front of the big box stores. He did what he could, you know, to do the clean out, do the demo and all this kinds of thing. And so the insurance company said, wait a minute, we've got a little clause in our policy that says we're going to pay the lowest amount of A, the damages that were sustained, or B, what it cost you to repair it. And so now all of a sudden, he's the guy that did all the contracting work. All this was done without without insurance, without a contractor's license, without warranties that a contractor would give you. And, you know, he would pay some employees. Some of them, like I said, I paid him cash. I don't know. I didn't really keep track of that. And so, and even if he did keep track, he's then got to make sure the cash is accounted for. It get a receipt or something like that. So he was having an issue with trying to prove his case down the road. And you can have that at the trial or arbitration end, or you can have it in the beginning at the claims end. They're going to say, well, prove it to us. We'll pay you, but you just got to show what you spent. And you got to make sure you keep those receipts and document everything.
All right. That's good. All right, let's go to break. We got Teresa on the line. We'll take her when we come back. She's got a question regarding a quitclaim in real estate. So we'll be right back. All things legal after this break. Hey, we're back. Dux and Sari, Albert, Nico, your weekend lawyers. All things legal. We got Teresa on the line. Hey, Teresa, you on All Things Legal? Dux and Sari, and Albert, Nico, what you have for us?
Hi. Well, I just want to tell you that I really I listen to your show every Sunday morning on my way to church, and I enjoy not only your legal advice, but your sports talk also, because I'm a huge South Louisiana sports fan. But my question today is about a quitclaim deed. We had obtained some property through a quitclaim deed from a relative, and now we're selling that property. And the people who are buying it, first of all, wanted me to pay for title insurance. So I didn't think that was my responsibility, so I said no. So, of course, now there's a clause in the contract that, you know, I need to, you know, make sure that the deed is, you know, free of all liens and all that stuff. And I just don't know, is it the closing attorney who will be handling the closing? Are they going to do the title research to make sure that there are no problems? How do I prove that I have no reason to believe that what I have is not valid and correct, but, you know, since I obtained it through a quitclaim deed, I'm not 100% sure. So I just don't know, I guess, how to proceed or if there's anything that I need to do before the closing.
No, you can proceed. A quitclaim deed is certainly a valid instrument in Louisiana. It's done all the time. What the title, the closing attorney, typically the buyer will select a closing attorney, and that closing attorney is going to run, at minimum, an abstract on the property. And the abstract means that someone will go to the courthouse and pull the records and make sure that there are no liens that, you know, and then the closing attorney, if there is title insurance, will write a title opinion to the title insuring company saying, yes, we've researched everything and it seems to be, you know, good to go. And so that should all be done on their end. What parish are you in?
Well, actually, it's in Mississippi. I mean, I live here, it's some property that we have in Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's warranty deeds.
But,
yeah.
You know, there are deeds in Mississippi, but they're recorded, and so you know they will go forward and look at those at that title. They'll do a title search and just make sure that that you are the person that has the deed to the company to the property, and. That's all going to be done by their closing attorney that they hire.
Okay, good. That's put my mind at ease because I just wasn't sure if there was something that I needed to do in addition to just, you know, what they will do. So, well, great. Thank you so very much. You've answered my question.
Thank you, Teresa. Keep listening. Thank you.
I will. Okay.
All right. Thanks so much. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, Doug, who we have next? We have Jay. All right, let's go to Jay. Doug, Jay, you on All Things Legal with Doug Sincera and Albert Nico. What you got for us, Jay?
Hey, good morning, folks. Good morning to your listeners as well.
All right, brother. What you got for us, man?
Well, let me say this right here, that I'm a New Orleans native, and what seems to be happening in the streets today is that there's a parking ticket thing, okay? And I know that you're not here, that you don't specialize in parking tickets, but let me tell you what's going on. People are going down the streets of, let's just say, the corner of Common and Carondelet, okay? And they see an automobile with a parking ticket on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that would happen to be my automobile, by the way, which expired like and it may not have even expired. Well, yeah, it expired perhaps by 20 minutes or half an hour. I know I'm dragging it on. I apologize for your time. But the thing is that they take the people who are searching for a place to park, they take the parking ticket off your car. They find a place to illegally park going towards Canal Street or whatever on Carondelet, and they place the parking ticket underneath their windshield wiper blade. So the meter maid, you know, with her Fritos in one pocket and a Hawaiian punch on the other side, okay? I'm serious, I have viewed it, okay?
No, right? I'm with you. I'm 100% with you.
Okay, so and then they see that big old parking ticket right there, and don't even have the qualifications to think, well, hey, I've been working this corner since 8 a.m. and it's now 9:30 p.m., I'm the meter maid, and they see a parking ticket on it, they're just going to pass it by, okay? Okay, and that's the reason for that is because they don't care, you know? They don't care. I've gotten parking tickets anyway, my point being is there's a scam out there with parking tickets that people are taking parking tickets off of other cars and putting them on their cars and allowing these degenerate people that they have. I'm not calling them all degenerate, okay? I'm just saying, okay, they just walk on by it, you know?
It's okay to call them that. It's okay. All right.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what the proper language is on your show here today.
No, you're good with us. We're
the American, everyone.
You know? But honestly, what's happening is these people are taking parking tickets off of cars, putting it on their cars to avoid these meter maids who don't give a rat's backside about their job. They're just more concerned about fraud, you know? And so,
well, I mean, I think Albert got a ticket while he was on the show, right? A couple of years ago, they gave you a ticket.
But it was a camera ticket.
So you got yeah, you got a traffic ticket while you were broadcasting, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
8:20 a.m. I said I can prove I wasn't there. I was on the radio.
It doesn't matter. You still got to go through the complications of trying to deal with it. You know.
No question.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. Even though I suspect the administration doesn't listen to our show, or if they do, they probably get upset with us after we if they hear some of the things we have to say.
What else is going on in the streets, my brother? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I hear you. So,
City of New Orleans, man, anything's possible.
Well, I think Jay will. We just implore the meter maids to read the tickets.
No, listen. That you know what? That is definitely a simple solution to a permanent problem we have here, okay? I'm trying to say basically is I think that if any of your listeners or perhaps maybe someone who works at the meter parking ticket place, whatever you call it over there in New Orleans, would perhaps maybe need to scrutinize these people that they're not doing their jobs.
There you go.
And they got thieves out there that are picking on people, okay? And my car's going to be towed one day, this, this, and that, and I just as a result of the fact that somebody else is scamming me. That's all I feel, you know.
There you go. All right, well, you got a form to do it. I wish the administration would be as upset about murder, robbery, and carjacking as they are about parking tickets.
Yeah, I know.
Seems like their priorities are a little reversed. So
you know, they don't make any money on murders and carjackings. They make their money on parking tickets.
Oh, in the short term. In the long term, people don't want to come here because they don't want to relocate their businesses, and they don't want to buy houses here because they're concerned about the crime. But that's in the short term, you're correct. All right, Jay. Well, you got your form. Call us back anytime if you got any, call us in a couple months. Let us know your progress if that happens to you again, and we'll give you another form. And it's okay to say degenerate for people who are doing that. It's okay on our show. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers. We had Jay and talking about the parking tickets. And one of the issues, if you get a parking ticket and you want to contest it, you have to take a day off of work to go contest it. So a lot of times it's just cheaper to pay the $30 or $60 than, take a day off. Right, Albert?
Either that or just grab the parking ticket and put it on the car behind you. Like that.
Yeah, that's solution number two. Also, let me ask you this about – what's that? Go ahead.
Like people are out there doing.
That's right. Also, when Teresa called earlier on the way to church, man, we have a lot of sanctified listeners. They go to church. You know, they're probably a good bit of them. So we'll see them in heaven when we leave this earth. But she was talking about titles and warranty deeds in Mississippi. And if you do this about once a year, you explain the difference between a warranty deed. Because we have a lot of listeners in Mississippi who deal with warranty deeds, Louisiana with titles. What are the difference between the two?
Well, you know, the title, Louisiana is a little different because, some will argue that we don't have deeds, right? What we have is an act of cash sale. And in that act of cash sale, it is a sale from the seller to the buyer. It's got a full property description. It talks about the as-is clause and all those sorts of things. And that document is recorded in the public record. So in Louisiana, it's very important, and it's the public records doctrine, which is relied upon very heavily in Louisiana. The whole notary concept is in terms of recordation and what's in the public record and what's not in the public record. For instance, let's say I sell you my house, and you got a cash sale document, right? And then all of a sudden, and you don't record that document, and I now turn around and sell that house to a third party. And the third party has their title attorney examine the public records. They examine what's been filed. And that transfer of the house to you is not recorded. That third person can rely on the public records doctrine. And that sale from me to that third party is valid. Now you would have a cause of action against me for selling the house again, but that third party will not be disturbed of their possession. And so it's very important to go in and have your documents recorded. And so it's also important the banks rely on it. They go look at that public record to see if there are any tax liens, any liens under the Public Works Act for laborers and material suppliers who did not get paid on any particular job that you had doing work on your house. All kinds of liens, judgments, you know, where a judgment will be filed and recorded, and then it's picked up in that property. So the public records doctrine is very, very sacrosanct in Louisiana. Mississippi is very, very much the same, but if you show up with a deed and you have the deed to that property, it's much like an auto title, right? Mm-hmm. When you have the title to that car and it's been transferred to you, you know, you're the owner of that property. And so, you know, obviously they do record those as well, but I've seen where dad and mom have a payable upon death provision,
right,
or transfer of death provision to in a deed in Mississippi
deed,
where, yeah, and then, you know, dad dies, but mom doesn't record any information that dad died. And so she's now, when she wants to go refinance or do something with her insurance, whatever, she's got to now prove that dad died because she's got to now prove that she's the sole owner of that property if she wants to sell it or whatever the case may be.
Now, we got about a minute to go. Why is title insurance important in Louisiana?
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. I got to tell you, if your title attorney does a good job, and for instance, if you buy a house that someone's been living in for more than 30 years, you pretty much don't need title insurance if the abstract that was performed was done properly. And so, because once you're there 30 years, if there's some sort of setback or some sort of whatever, then, you know, you own that property. And so, title insurance is an expensive thing. I very rarely see it. I do a lot of real estate litigation, and you rarely see where
it's title
pulled into the game.
Yeah.
A different fight.
Yeah. And we'd be remiss to mention that your associate, Jeff Seisman, right? His father-in-law is the godfather of real estate closings. Kevin Heigl,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Kevin Heigl is one of the wisest title attorneys in probably the state. Been doing it forever,
he's
kind of on the brink of retirement. I think he goes in to, you know, keep his wife happy, but he'll refer a lot of things to him because he's very good.
He was the notary on Louisiana Purchase. There, Thomas Jefferson wasn't there when he signed, but a lot of the high, you know, diplomats for the United States government in 1812 was there when he notarized the document. So if you're ever down into Pontalba, you can visit Kevin's notary on Louisiana Purchase. All right. Well, we're about done on hour number one and all things legal. We'll be back for hour number two. You can call us at a law firm on the South Shore at 504-837-1304, 504-837-1304. Call on the North Shore at 985-624-9697, which is in Mandeville, in God's country. So we'll be back for hour number two. You can also check us out on Facebook. We're streaming live. Also, our webpage is nslawla.com, nslawla.com. You check us out. But we'll be back for hour number two and all things legal. So just stay tuned, and we'll see you in about 10 minutes. Hey, we're back. Hour number two, Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, on till 10 o'clock today. Give us a call at 260-1870. And we're coming out to break. I was listening to the call at LSU basketball game winning yesterday. And this is an interesting. I have a book by Bob Remy, who's This Day in Louisiana Sports History, which I steal from weekly. And in this day in 1970, Pistol Pete Maravich played in his last game at LSU at the Parker Agricultural Center, or the Ag Center is known for us LSU graduates, and played against Kentucky in a national televised game against who was at the time they had Dan Issel. They lost 121-105, but in his last game, he scored 64 points and grabbed 17 rebounds in a losing effort. So, and that probably would have been a lot more if they had the three-point line. And then on February 25th of 1977, Pete scored game against the New York Knicks when he was playing for the Jazz, where he scored 68 points. And I think they figured out if they had a three-point line, it would have been 81. And on top of that, in the fourth quarter, he was called on two charging fouls that were really blocking fouls, right, where he fouled out with a minute and a half to go. He probably scored some more.
You can actually go to YouTube and type in, Maravich, New York Knicks, and it's like a little five-minute video of every one
every
of his
shot.
Shots.
Everyone, yeah.
Yeah. And a couple of fake passes,
Oh yeah, and I think it was from the New York Knicks broadcast, and it was the announcers were just, oh come on, right. He was Showtime before there was Showtime. So there you go. Time goes by quick, but we'll hopefully we'll see LSU in the NCAA playoffs. It's good that they're going to have 25% capacity is better than zero for the NCAA championships, but I guess we'll make progress. Hopefully by Omaha, LSU, when they're there for the baseball, they'll be close to 100%. But it sounds like there's some optimism as far as Major League Baseball is going to open up, and it looks like NFL is planning on opening up. I think at this point for full capacity. So if nothing changes,
well, of course that's always going to depend on the governors, right? And what happens for state by state.
Or the mayors, in our case for New Orleans.
Or the mayors, or the mayors.
Don't get me started. We'll give the mayor a break today, huh?
If I'm anything, I'm flexible and ready to have my opinion
challenged.
And so I mentioned earlier that I was not a big fan of title insurance, but I would love a title attorney who may be listening to call in and educate us, educate everyone as to what title insurance is, what it does, how often it's called upon, and what it protects and how much it typically costs. Because, we have a lot of buyers that buy and sell homes, and, obviously you want to, on the buyer's end, you want to protect yourself. But again, I think it's something that it's just a standard transaction, as part of the real estate transaction these days. And I think if someone could call in, that would be great to help fully explain what title insurance is and why you should spend the money and get it on the front end.
Now, so, Jefferson,
here's your
case. The real estate market in Jefferson Parish is steaming hot right now. And in certain parts of town, you'll take all of 12 hours to sell it or get a bunch of offers when you put a property up for sale. Now, if you're a first time home buyer, which we do probably have some millennials who listen to us when we're not making fun of them, right? And so in good fun. It's all good fun. Put down your avocado and just take a deep breath. We love you.
Everybody's got to be able to take a joke these days.
That's right. That's right. We'll that's one of our missions, to teach millennials to take
a
joke.
God knows people tell lawyer jokes all the time.
I know. And you don't see
and
me
get well deserved. So you got to just laugh and let it roll back.
Yeah, we embrace lawyer jokes here. We think we embrace them, and we just we laugh with them. So, but if you're buying a house, and tell us a little bit about when you agree to purchase a house, there's a purchase agreement, And,
right.
You know, what is a purchase agreement and what are some of the escape hatches you have if, you know, you get into the house and find out it's not, you know, there's some things in there that we didn't anticipate.
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, people say, oh, yeah, I want to put an offer in the house. Okay, well, when you put an offer in, it's a firm offer, right? It is an offer that you're going to buy this house and you're going to put up a earnest money deposit to, and if you walk away for a reason that you don't have a reason to in the purchase agreement, then you're going to lose your deposit. And so the current real estate, standard real estate purchase agreement, and you can go to NOMAR, I think it's New Orleans Realtors or whatever, and basically it you can get forms for the real estate commission and different places and take a look at it. But there are a lot of provisions. There's a specific performance provision. There's a 10% of the purchase price penalty provision. There's attorney's fees provision if somebody's got to go in and enforce it. So all of a sudden you go in and you say, you know what? I don't think I want to do this anymore. I'm able to get the financing at you know, under 4%. You know, there are really not a whole lot of things wrong with the house. And so I want to walk away. And you're going to be likely held liable. Now, you know, in Jefferson Parish, you probably got five backup offers that might be more. So the seller may not care. But if you're in an area where the sales are kind of sluggish, those people are going to want to sell their house. They may have moved already or anticipated moving. So there's some strict penalties in that purchase agreement that you really need to be on the lookout for. Also, there is an as-is clause. And usually when there are agents involved, they're going to get you to sign that agreement, and you'll eventually sign it in the sale agreement to say, look, you're selling this house. You're buying this house as is. Take it or leave it. You know, we're going to give you the opportunity to inspect it. At that point, there's usually an inspection period. Sometimes it's 10 days. Sometimes it's 14 days, depending on how quickly you want to do a closing. And you hire a Louisiana licensed home inspector. You can find them at LSDHI, Louisiana State Board of Home Inspectors. I think it's .gov or .org, and you can find them there, and you can find an inspector. Typically, if you have a real estate agent representing you, that real estate agent will recommend somebody that they've worked with in the past. But you want that person to go through with a fine-tooth comb and try to discover as many problems and defects with the house, or tell you, hey, this is a great house. You got, you know, the roof is very good condition. It was well built. Whatever the case may be, and if you have some issues that, hey, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm looking at this water heater and it's 15 years old. So I want to buy the house, but replace the water heater for me or give me a credit, or I'm going to offer you a little bit less because I didn't anticipate, you know, these half dozen problems that the home inspection produced, right? So at that point, you either walk away or you send in a list in your response to the home inspection. Say, look, we'd like to have these things done. And so the homeowner's negotiation at that point. The homeowner's going to say, look, you know what? I'm not doing it. The price is the price. And, you know, at that point, you have the option to walk away without any type of issues. They say, yeah, we'll go ahead and do it. At that point, and I've got a case right now right out of the Terrebonne area, where the guy goes the day before the closing for the final walkthrough, and a laundry list of the things that this group decided they were going to sell the house to him. They, you know, went in there, put lipstick on it, flipped it. They said that they would go ahead and take care of. Well, they did. And so here he was right before the closing, and they did not do the work that they were supposed to do. And so, you know, he was pretty invested in the property, had spent money on, you know, people coming to take a look at it, a home inspection, got a deposit out there, all those kinds of things. And now you got to make a decision. Gee whiz, do I want to now eat this cost or sue them for breach of contract or give them a certain period of time after the closing to complete the work. And, you know, and if not, then we can, I'll move in and sue them for breach of contract at that point. You know, so you want to, you want to make sure you do that walkthrough and don't just rely on the real estate agent for the seller that, to say, oh yeah, everything was done.
Okay. Because, now let me, okay. I got a few more questions to you after the break. One's the, how do you reconcile an as-is clause in a sale with a property disclosure that gives representations to the condition of the property? And also, right, too, what's the nature and extent a home inspector, what are they responsible for and what they're not responsible for in connection with the sale? So let's go to break.
That's a loaded question there.
That's all I know. Let's go to break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. All right, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Charles. Hey, Charles, you're on all things legal.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What you got for us?
I understand that anybody can sue anybody for anything, but whether it has merit or not is another question.
Oh, there you go.
Me and my wife are looking at suing UPS for something, for damage, basically, we ordered plants are dead. It was supposed to be delivered on a Friday. It wasn't delivered until Monday. And we're the recipient, not the shipper, as a shipper.
Can you do me a favor? Can you get off of speakerphone? We're getting like some, it sounds like you're on a speakerphone. Yeah, much better. Thank you. Sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
Okay, go ahead.
So as a shipper, I know we're held to arbitration, but as a recipient of the package, is it possible to sue UPS?
Well, so when did this occur?
Yeah.
Did it occur during this ice storm?
Well, it just occurred very recently. Right now, it actually occurred this weekend.
Okay, and so where did the product come from?
The product came from Florida.
Okay.
What's the value? What's the value of the product?
It was insured for $100, but the value was about $200.
Okay, and have you made a claim for the insurance?
Yes.
Okay, and are they not paying it?
It's under investigation. I know I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but
you want to sue a major corporation for $100?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the cost of that loss is going to be probably $500 or $600, and that's assuming you can sue them in a state court. You might have to sue them even in a federal court, but I just it's not worth the effort, time, money. You just take your licks and move on. You know, insure it for more next time.
Could we do a small claims court? Would that be feasible?
It may not, because not that. It would probably be more expensive for them, but they probably would not want to set a precedent that they would be sued in a state court. I mean, they would be able to possibly remove it based on some federal laws that govern shipping and, you know, trucking and delivery and that sort of thing. I mean, they may. I mean, you could try, and you'll see how they respond. You would be doing it only for principle only, and not for any economic benefit, because the time and expense of you know, fighting that. Because I mean, UPS, their lawyers aren't, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. And so maybe they pay you. I would say that the complaint fashion would probably get you further than suing them in small claims court. I mean, here, I always tell the story on taking your licks. Before I had, you know, a payroll company, I got a letter from the IRS saying that I owe $300-something in payroll taxes. Okay? And so I gave it to, you know, CPA. They looked at it. They said, I have good news and bad news for you. They said, what's the good news? I said, you don't owe the $300-something to the IRS. I said, what's the bad news? My bill's $700. So that's sort of the scenario you're in, is you may be spending a buck to try to recover 50 cents. And I know it's aggravating. And, you know, I think one of the things we do as lawyers is we advise clients as to what battles to fight and which ones to not fight, and which ones are attainable and which ones aren't. And if you were my client, I would say this is a bad situation. I'm very, very sorry. But the economic cost, the emotional cost, the time cost of trying to get back that $100 is probably going to be greater than the $100 itself. But theoretically, could you sue? Yes. You could theoretically sue in small claims court, and you would see how UPS responds. They may throw you $100 just to get rid of you. I don't know.
Yeah. It's not the money. The money is, it's just.
Look, let me tell you something. You know, UPS doesn't care. You're not going to change how UPS does business over this. I'm sorry to say that, but I'm just giving you truth because they it's not going to make one lick of difference in how they operate.
All right. Look, thanks for the call.
But thanks for the call.
A lot of callers to get.
All right. Who do we got next, Doug? Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on All Things Legal with Doug Sincere and Albert Nico.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What's happening, Mike?
I got a question about my homeowner's policy.
All right.
It says that claims will be paid at actual cash value, which if I read the fine print, it says that the depreciated value will be paid, as opposed to the replacement value.
Correct.
And I'm trying to determine what my exposure is. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that my house burns down, right? And the house was built in the 60s, 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
What's my exposure?
That's a different situation. If it's a total loss, then if it's a total loss, then they will pay for the, it's a value policy loss, and they'll pay for the entire amount. In other words, let's say you've got a house and you've got property coverage for $200,000 on it. Okay, and the house burns down. Well, they insured it for $200,000, so they need to step up to the plate if it's a total loss, and pay you the $200,000. Okay, so they're not going to nickel and dime you, wait, your carpet was old, that kind of thing. What you have to look out for, and this happens very often, and make sure on the front end when you're dealing with your insurance agent, there's something called a co-insurance penalty. Sometimes it's 80%, sometimes it's 90%. And basically what the insurance company is saying with the co-insurance penalty is that you have to tell us what your house is worth. And if you value it less, like less than 80% of the value, so let's say 80% on $200,000 would be – exactly. And so you would take that $160,000, and let's say you got it valued at $150,000, but your house is really worth $200,000, not including the lot, just the house itself to rebuild, then they're going to take a penalty. You're going to lose a percentage of that policy limits on the cost to rebuild that house because you did not tell us that the property was valued properly. And so, for instance, okay, we talked about this earlier in the show. Materials have pretty close to doubled, not across the board, but in very many ways since the COVID thing, right? We've got fewer people working. Certain plants have been shut down. We've got issues getting product from China, where a lot of the building materials come from, the flooring and the, you know, whatever else. And so the cost of materials have skyrocketed. So now the cost to build a house, you know, maybe used to be $100 a square foot. Well, now maybe it's $160 a square foot to rebuild. and not your, you know. So you got to be careful and make sure that you look at your homeowner's policy, see what the value of just the house is, not the lot, but just the house, and say, gee whiz, can I rebuild it for this? And if you can't and you're lower than that, check your coinsurance clause to see if it's 80 or 90%. And if you can't build it for that, you know, 80% or 90%, then you probably need to go ahead and you know, raise your insurance coverage to cover a total loss. Because what happens is, you know, 90% of the policies, 99.9% of the policies that get paid out are not the full policy limit. Very rarely is there a total loss. And so, you know, if you have it valued at half the value, 90% of the claims are going to be less than that half value of the house. Insurance companies know this, so they want you paying premiums on the full value and not on a reduced value. But actual cash value, you know, you knew that going in probably that, hey, look, they're going to depreciate things. So carpeting, I think they have a useful life schedule on all these components, right? So, yeah, your carpeting, I think it's only like 7 years. And then it's worth nothing. So they might pay you 10 cents on the dollar if it's older than 7 years old. You have to look around at the different, you know, sheetrock is sheetrock. So they're not going to really depreciate that because it's drywall. It should last pretty much forever. Baseboards, doors, things like that. But your things that can wear out, your appliances, your roof, your general maintenance things, you know, they may hit you on that. For instance, if there's a hailstorm and you got actual cash value on the roof, then all of a sudden, you know, they're going to look at when that roof was built and then say, hey, well, look, that roof's 20 years old. You know, you only had a 30-year warranty on it. So, you know, we're going to depreciate it by 2/3.
All right. That's good explanation. Thanks for the call. Let's go to break. Doug Cenceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this break. Time out. Hey, we're back. Doug Cenceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Dan. Hey, Dan, you on all things legal?
Man, I ain't heard from you guys in a while.
Man, I hadn't heard from you. The COVID staying away from you, Dan?
Well, I got my first COVID shot about 2 weeks ago, so I'm waiting for my second one. To be honest with you, I didn't want to get it. And then they started coming out with, well, they got COVID 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I said, hell, man, the odds are starting to get against me, you know? I thought it was me and just COVID number one, but they done threw about half a dozen other ones at me.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad you sound good.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm an old man now, you know. I'm 87 in January.
Yeah, I know. Well, you sound good.
Yeah. Don't let the sound fool you. But look, when you was talking about how to get out of the real estate contract, don't they have a 24-hour you can do anything and get off?
No, you sign your name to it.
That's on the act of sale.
That purchase agreement.
Okay. So you can get out after 24 hours on the purchase agreement, but not on the contract to buy it.
You can get out in 24 hours on a purchase agreement. You sign the agreement.
What basically you have to do is get out for a cause.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But I thought at one time they used to do it for, I've been doing this for almost 80 years now, so.
Well, you were also there for the acquisition of Louisiana from France, then, right?
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? I might be talking about the old days. I think I let my contract go this year. I got my first contract when I was 30 years old as a broker. So I think I've been the longest broker in Louisiana, and I'm probably the oldest one by now, too.
Yeah, so that would be.
I've held that a long, long time.
Well, it's now I think there's certain type. I recall, Albert, there's certain type of loans that you have a 72-hour rescission period.
Correct. Yes, right. And that's all a federal government kind of thing, you know, where you can back out on it. But in a real estate transaction, you sign the purchase agreement. You signed it. There's no, you know, there's no 24-hour, okay. 72-hour. I mean, it's usually a very excuse me, very fast property, especially in a hot market. Yeah. Very fast process, especially in a hot market. And so, you know, you sign an agreement. If somebody's got to wait 24 hours to, you know, implement the terms of that contract, it's going to slow things down to a screeching halt. So when you signed it, you signed it, and you better be prepared to live with the consequences.
Can I ask you a quick question? I signed a lease contract with a lady recently, and it was supposed to be for a year. Well, I didn't have my glasses or something, so I said, I knew the lady, and she's a real estate salesperson for another place. And when she brought me the contract, it didn't have a yearly lease. It turned out to be a monthly lease. I said, no, honey, we agreed to a yearly lease. Mm. So can we just change that, but initially monthly and say yearly on it?
Yep.
Yeah, long as y'all both agree.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can initial it.
All I got to do now is have a she doesn't have to reinitial it or anything. She has to reinitial it, but she doesn't have to sign the end of it, huh?
Well, what you could do is just initial it and put it in the scratch out, put it in the morning, yeah. Initial it and date it to show that it was initialed and changed after the initial date.
Yeah, because all of a sudden she's getting late on the payments, and I'm kind of thinking she might back out on a monthly. Well, if I throw a yearly back onto it, well, I might keep her for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She'll agree to it.
Yeah, I think that'll
do. Look, Dan, next time, Dan, wear your glasses.
Yeah, man. Like when I was about to say they all try to screw you, but at 87, nobody's screwing you.
Sunday morning, church-going listeners, and you're going to throw us that one.
All right, making something nasty out there. It wasn't intended that way.
Oh, Dan. All right. I don't hit the dump button anymore. I'm home. So you can get away with it now, Dan.
You should never told me that.
I should never told you that. All right, Dan. Thanks much.
Bye.
Dan hadn't turned a dirty joke in about 6 years, but now he's done it. All right, Dan is back. Let's go to Frank. He's got a question regarding pit bulls. Hey, Frank, you're on All Things Legal.
Good morning. I got attacked by 5 pit bulls over on the West Bank earlier this year. I went to court. They only claimed 3 of them and said the other 2 were strays, but that's besides the point. The judge went ahead and made a ruling that the owner of the dogs that were renters to the property were indigent.
All right.
What's my next step?
Well, the problem is, you looking for civil liability?
I'm looking to get my medical bills paid.
Well,
I heard on my body from an attack, and you know.
Yeah, I think the problem is that the person responsible for the dogs do not have assets or money. It'd be squeezing blood out of a turnip.
The second thing is, if the landlord, there are some cases out there that said if the landlord knew or should have known, or if the landlord maybe failed to maintain a fence that the landlord was required to maintain and the dogs got out, there may be some liability on the landlord. So that avenue can be investigated. Like Doug said, if the homeowner doesn't have any kind of renter's insurance or liability insurance the renter doesn't have any of that, then, yeah, you're wasting your time.
That's why when you people who get mugged in New Orleans or get robbed and they don't sue the robber is because, you know, they're probably in jail, have no assets, and there's no civil recovery. You know, in civil court, it's about money. It's not about putting someone in jail. And if the person you're suing has no money, there's very limited, there's really no recourse. So, you know, that's why when you look at the TV, you know, commercials for lawyers, they don't say if you've been robbed by a hardened criminal, come see us, we'll sue him. They say, if you've been hit by a trucking company or, you know, or a service company that has a lot of insurance, come see us. And that's why they don't do that, you see. So,
We had a, just on a personal injury standpoint, we had a case where the guy, you know, my brother's friend, he knew him, and his car broke down. So he was going to, he had to walk along the side of the highway to the next, the nearest gas station or whatever to make a, you know, to get some help. And so somebody ran off the road, and he had over $500,000 in medical bills. I mean, he got messed up pretty badly. The problem is the person that hit him had a $15,000 policy, and he had no uninsured motorist coverage on his own auto policy, which would have covered that. And so it was $15,000, and this person, you know, rented an apartment, didn't really have any assets, and he was just out of luck. I mean, he had to get, you know, apply for Medicaid and everything else to pay his medical bills because that person was not adequately insured, and nor was he. So, and in your situation, you know, we've done pretty well getting people injury damages for being attacked by dogs. But in this case, you've got a situation where, the person's pretty much indigent. You know, best thing we do is let the parish take the dogs away. If you can somehow establish that there was a fence, the dogs got out of the fence, the fence wasn't properly repaired, and the owner, I mean, you can do some investigation and see if it's that sort of thing. And maybe the owner of that property's liability coverage would look into it and pick it up, or at least give you some sort of settlement just to pay you medicals to not have to go ahead and defend it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a tough deal, Frank. We're very sorry about that.
Well, I have a whole line of most of the stuff that you were just talking about, I have proof of.
Well, I would take it to a lawyer and see, but, that's...
So you do have proof about the landlord negligence?
Yeah.
I have give us a call on Monday, 837-1304, and we'll take a look at it.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Frank, my man. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to a break.
Doug
Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back for our final segment. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to phone lines. Got Buddy. He's got another real estate question. Hey, Buddy, you and all things legal.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good.
First of all, thank you for taking my call. I know you have a lot of people trying to get through, so I try to give you a brief synopsis if I can. We own a duplex. I have a tenant on one side, and he was under a 6-month lease. The 6-month lease expired in January the 31st. And I want to get possession of the property. I know that he has kids and whatever, so I kind of just didn't really enforce the possession. Now, February is here. He hadn't paid his rent yet. So I'm tired of going back and forth with it, so I just kind of want to just get possession. But because there's really no lease in place at this time, do I give him a 10-day notice or 5-day notice before I file for possession?
I think you have 10 to give days.
If you're month to month, it's got to be 10 days.
10-day notice, yes.
Now, did I need to have an actual – I told him, you know, verbally, we talked about this, about me letting him kind of do month to month and figure some things out. Did I have to put a 10-day – I mean, a month to month lease in place or no? Or it automatically month to month? Because it's in the contract that it would go to month to month if that's what – we decided to do.
So if you have a lease and your lease expires and maintain possession, the lease automatically converts to a month-to-month lease that the tenant and the landlord are still bound by the terms of the lease. So in other words, even though the lease is
month-to-month expires, I'm sorry to cut you off, sir. I apologize.
No, even though the lease expires, it just the term of the lease becomes a month-to-month lease, but you're still bound by the provisions of the lease other than how long the lease is.
Right. So it's a 10-day notice I have to give.
Yes. That's the yes. You got to give 10-day notice, and if they don't get out, you go to what parish are you in?
Arlington.
Dot your I's, cross your T's. Try, you know.
I know it. Yeah.
Jefferson, cross them twice. Dot them twice.
I appreciate everything you guys do. We appreciate this program. And y'all be safe. Thank y'all so much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Yes. Yeah, they.
You know, Doug, real quickly, you'd asked me before about home inspectors, and we could do a lot longer segment on that. But in these last couple of minutes, what people have to understand about a home inspection. I also always compare home inspectors to like a family practitioner or a general practitioner. They're gonna go and look at it and say, you know, you go to that doctor and he says, look, you got a problem with your knee. You need to go see an orthopedist. You know, you got a problem, you know, with your digestive system. You know, you need to go see a gastroenterologist. Home inspectors are very much the same way. They are a generalist. They will look at the air conditioner and they're going to test the temperature drop, whether it gets cool enough within a certain period of time. And they're going to turn on the plumbing and make sure that the water drains like it's supposed to drain in the tub. And if it doesn't, they're going to say, look, you need to contact a licensed plumber to further investigate what's going on. You need to contact, you know, an HVAC guy to make sure that, you know, it's not dropping right. You need to go get them to check it out. And so, and they're not code compliant. They don't necessarily check for code because the codes are constantly changing. And depending on when the house was built, you know, if you got a house that was built in the 1950s and it hadn't been updated, I'm certain that there are, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of things that are not code compliant with today's code. And so, you know, they'll point out certain things. For instance, if you have fuses instead of circuit breakers, they're going to look in the panel box and point those things out. If you have aluminum wiring or something along those lines, you just say, look, get an electrician to come in and take care of these things. But they're not going to say, hey, look, this is not installed as per current code, because, you know, they have to keep track of every different code enforcement provision, you know, from the beginning of time, and it's just beyond the scope of what they do. You can go to that lsbhi.org website that we talked about, Louisiana State Board of Home Inspectors, if you're interested, and there is a standards of practice listed on there that shows you exactly what they are responsible and what they're not responsible.
All right. Well, there you go. Okay. Thanks, Al. We got to it's in the can. We'll see you next week on All Things Legal. Be good and be blessed. We'll see you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!